Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
What am I supposed to do here, Jason? Oh, have we already started? So we're like back on the air right now? Cool. It's been a while. What can I tell you? Hey! Thanks for joining me here in Newsline PM. Thanks for hooking up and hanging. I appreciate that a lot on this Tuesday afternoon as we wrangle our way through the month of July. Good to be back. Well, that's, you know, look, okay, maybe it's not good to be back, but it's okay to be back. I'm not going to lie to you. I was telling Carlson, it's kind of like the old Yogi Berra line, deja vu all over again. I'm gone for 2 weeks out of the country. And I didn't do anything online where I checked up on news or anything like that. And I come back, we got back, 3 o'clock Sunday morning, something like that. And so late Sunday and yesterday, I was kind of reviewing some newspaper materially. And it's like, you know, in many respects, it's like everything was at a standstill while I was gone. We're going to talk about here in a moment. The mayor is still fighting with the Department of Justice, and now he's got his city attorney has sent him just this rebukeful letter that says, you know, basically get off your butt and begin negotiating in good faith with the Department of Justice, because if you don't have an agreement reached by the end of this month, it's lawsuit time. So apparently the mayor, within the next 2 hours or so here, is going to be addressing that very issue. And this remains very contentious. And I think that when you have someone like Pete Holmes, because Pete Holmes, I think, has been, at least publicly supporting the mayor, and now to release this letter to the public and find that there's a lot of backfighting that has been going on. And I don't know where McGinn is getting his legal advice. I don't know where Mayor Mike is getting his legal advice if it's not from the city attorney. Because the city attorney is, like I said, rebukeful of the mayor, saying you have not been doing due diligence in respect to the DOJ findings and the agreement and responding to the complaints about the pattern of using excessive force on the police department. And the mayor, what the city attorney is saying is the mayor needs to get off the dime. Como's Ian Sterling's been covering this. Joins me here on Newsline PM this afternoon. Hi, Ian.
Hey, Ken, we missed you.
Well, thank you. I know it's not true, but I say thank you anyway.
And the more things change, the more they stay the same. You're right about that as far as the mayor goes. And, in fact, up until this point, the mayor, if you asked him about this, if you would talk about it at all, would just say, we're cooperating with the Department of Justice and we'll reach a mutually beneficial agreement, essentially. And obviously the Department of Justice and now the city attorney does not feel that the mayor has been doing that.
Well, you know, I read the mayor's statement, which was released by his spokesperson. And he said, hey, look, we are negotiating in good faith. We're looking at the goals of lasting reforms, effective policing, and blah, blah, blah. The negotiations are ongoing. And it's almost like a duplicate statement that could have been issued at any point over the past couple of months here.
Is exactly what he has been saying all along. So obviously the press is very anxious to talk to the mayor about this. I was in an event with the mayor in Tremont today to promote small businesses. Was told by his chief of staff essentially that he doesn't have time to talk about it now, but he will be talking about it at a 1:30 event that he already had planned to talk about the seawall. So a little under an hour and a half from now, we'll go see if the mayor has anything new. And I actually pressed his chief of staff and said, he will be talking about this, right? He will actually have something to say. And he said that, yes, he would. So we'll see what he's got.
Was there also any assurance that there would be questions available from members of the media today? Because I got to tell you, one of the real areas of disappointment here is how the mayor has secluded himself from the public, vis-a-vis refusing to talk to members of the media at any length or depth about this issue.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I asked his chief of staff, hey, is he actually going to talk about this? Will he have something to say? Really meaning, will he have something new to say? And like I say, I think that's going to be one of those things where you have to show up and find out. We'll see how much he talks about the seawall versus the Department of Justice investigation and their demands. But I would think that at some point he's going to have to address us on this, and I anticipate there will be a question and answer session. Whether he will answer all of our questions remains to be seen.
Is there anything from the city council? Because one of the things in Pete Holmes' letter to the mayor, which he shared with some members of the council, indicated that Pete Holmes is of the opinion that members of the council should be brought back to the table to discuss the negotiations and the settlement, which has been called for by the Department of Justice. Has there been anything out of the council on this?
Not at this point. And in fact, when all this began to break yesterday afternoon, I shot down to City Hall, and it was like somebody had turned off the lights. It was right around 5 o'clock, and everybody had just managed to vanish. And it was very frustrating. We had, you know, basically the whole newsroom working on this, and no one wanted to talk. And that's from the Department of Justice all the way down to the city attorney's office, where we got a brief statement basically saying they don't discuss, you know, the current state of things on this case or give out legal advice in the media, essentially. City Council, you know, basically we know that they've received this, but they're not talking either.
Now, what about the police department? Have we heard anything from Chief Diaz or any of the upper echelon at SPD?
Well, it probably isn't too surprising that they have been mum on this, but I think that they're waiting for, basically, their boss is the mayor. That's the mayor's turn now to talk, and so we'll see what he's got to say at 1:30, and then hopefully we'll be able to get some reaction from SPD, maybe from the police union as well.
You know what, and I mentioned this a moment ago, I think what is increasingly frustrating to people, particularly those, and even those who may not have been entirely sympathetic with the findings of the Department of Justice, but I think the manner in which the mayor has stalled on this, and he's put together this 2020 reform plan that he has championed, and which now was ripped apart by Pete Holmes in the letter that he has written, saying that initiative lacks, what does he call it, substance and accountability, even in its implementation. And that is where the police chief and the mayor have both been hanging their hats, is that, look, we've already put together something that does not necessarily fit within the framework of what the DOJ has demanded, but we're working on this. And it seems as if they're the only two that think this is a worthwhile endeavor.
Well, and, you know, other cities have been sued by the Department of Justice over this type of thing, and that's been one of the only ways they've been able to make change happen. And we're not talking about, you know, big-dollar lawsuits here. I mean, that may be the threat, but at the end of the day, you're talking about different government agencies, you know, suing each other. So it's interesting to watch, and we'll see, you know, who knows what the mayor's motivation is in all of this. At one point, he said that it was just simply too expensive to go out and implement these changes that DOJ is looking for. So it's possible that the mayor is simply looking for federal dollars and trying to force their hand and say, yeah, we'll make your changes, but you need to pay for it.
Well, the seawall isn't the only thing that's crumbling with the mayor's address to the media today. What time is this scheduled to take place, Ian?
That should begin at around 1:30. We don't know if he'll talk about the seawall first. That's what I'm anticipating, and then move on to a question and answer session about this DOJ investigation.
All right. If we can, we'll touch back with you at that point, all right?
Sounds good. Hopefully all we'll know a lot more.
That's Como's Ian Sterling. Thanks for the update there, Ian. I appreciate it. I think the mayor's in over his head here. I think he's gasping for air, and I think he better settle down. Again, I don't know where he's getting legal advice from if it ain't from Pete Holmes. In a moment, Auburn turning things over to King County and people not happy about that. Stay with us.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
At what cost justice? I think that's one of the underlying questions in a move by Auburn city officials to turn that city's municipal court system over to King County. There was a very contentious meeting last night at Auburn City Hall. There were a couple of hundred people packed into the city council there. As the discussion went on whether or not this should happen. And apparently what the city of Auburn is saying, look, we just can no longer afford the current system, and it could be streamlined if we just contract it out with King County District Court for its services. And, you know, judges in Auburn's municipal court are very much opposed to this. But what was surprising is that the people who have been through the court system there, also the defendants who have been through, also opposed to this, saying that they get a different level of attention from a court system that's not as large and sometimes as unwieldy as the King County District Court can be. Como's John DiCepolo had a report on this. Here's what he had to say about it.
This is the place on the agenda where the public is invited to speak to the city council on any issue.
The city of Auburn has had its own court system since 1996.
This was one of the best run courts in the state of Washington, and I'm sorry to see it happen.
But city leaders think that system is costing them too much money. The idea is to streamline Auburn's legal system by having them contract out with King County District Court for their judicial services. But one big opponent of that measure, Judge Patrick Byrne, says that's not true.
The Auburn Municipal Court can provide that service. They can provide that service for $255,000 less than what the county can provide.
He believes in treatment, and it's that treatment that can help people rehabilitate their lives, rather than slapping them with a little time, giving them a fine, and sending them back out on the street.
And that's the real issue. Opponents of this proposal feel they would get a substandard court system, one that would process offenders too quickly and have them back out on the streets sooner to commit more crimes. But despite public outcry, city leaders voted 6-1 in favor of letting King County take the reins, a move that doesn't sit well with many who work here, but won't work here for much longer.
Well, I think you're going to lose 18 to 21 court employees that have been very dedicated to the city. This system is known for its accountability, making defendants accountable, making the system work to protect the victims, and we're going to lose all that.
Now, the next step will be to have King County set up their court systems down here in Auburn's buildings, but a timetable for when that would take place has yet to be determined. John DiCepolo, Como 4 News.
See, there's a lot at play here, and I can understand. One of the things that puzzles me is that I really am somewhat taken aback by the fact that these public debates, these expression of public concerns when decisions like this are to be made, it seems as if it's very perfunctory and really not of much real value, because I do not get the sense that the Auburn City Council members really listened to the people as they were expressing their opinion on this move last night. It feels to me as if the Auburn City Council sat down and had this decision made up before anybody even was able to go to the mic and express whether or not that they thought this was a good deal. And I understand that the trying times that we live in economically force cities to make decisions that are not always popular, that are not always perhaps in the best interest of the public that they serve, that these financial economic choices that have to be made in terms of whether or not we can afford to keep the court system independent and run as it has been since 1996, or whether we contract out to King County. I don't think, and I agree with the judges, the Auburn judges on this, It seems to me that the contract with King County is probably going to end up costing more to the city than it would be to kind of streamline the Auburn court system itself. And I think that particularly when we're talking about justice, particularly when we're talking about a system that really has tried to work to protect the victims, a system that has tried to work to keep defendants from reoffending, and getting them to a point where they can actually begin to turn their life around, I think that's handled better in a smaller, contained system like Auburn has had. I think this is a bad move. I think it's going to come back and bite Auburn in the butt. And it's too bad that the city council didn't keep an open mind in at least listening to the concerns expressed by the people at that meeting last night.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Hey, if you have not yet had the opportunity to see the video of this New York bus driver catching this little girl, 7-year-old girl living in the area, Coney Island area, she was perched in this third floor window. She had kicked out some kind of a screen that helped keep the air conditioner in place in the apartment that she lived in. And this little girl crawls out three stories up in the air, attracting a lot of people's attention. And there's this video online. You've got to go see it. You really do. It's just a little bit less than a minute. But it shows this guy, it shows the girl ultimately kind of almost diving out of this window. And this bus driver who's standing below makes one of the most miraculous catches that I think you're ever going to see. I mean, he positioned himself in such a place where as that girl was hurtling towards the ground, he reached out at the last minute before she was going to hit and caught her. I know he injured his, I think it's his left arm in catching her, but it is spectacular video. And this girl did not even get a scratch on her. Just if you Google this, you know, Google Coney Island girl free falling or something. It's amazing video. You got to see what this guy did. That's what's called a hero. In a moment, do you like going down to the waterfront in Seattle? Yeah, well, it's probably going to cost you.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
I'm back. I know some of you are disappointed. You know, I'm telling you, 2 weeks where the only decisions I really had to make was whether I walked 10 yards to the ocean or 10 feet to the pool. Oh, and it's like I was never gone. Hey, guess what? Seattle has a parking problem. I know that's going to come as staggering news to most of you, particularly along the waterfront. There's already been like 200 parking spaces that have been just magically disappeared because of the construction to replace the viaduct with the tunnel. And now the Sunday free parking, it's still going to be free. Kinda, sorta, maybe, in a way. But you're going to be limited to the amount of time that you can park along the waterfront on Sundays or on holidays, okay? So it's going to depend on you know, whatever the meters, the parking time said, whether it's the maximum of 2 hours or a maximum of 4 hours. And if you park beyond that, well, then you're going to get a ticket. And the tickets, you know, I don't know what the parking tickets are now. Maybe I'll tell you what, Rick Sheridan with the Seattle Department of Transportation may know. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you, Ken?
I'm doing all right. How much is a parking ticket these days?
It's approximately $44.
Wow. that's a bite.
That's a bite, but at the same time, what we want to do with these new time restrictions is to essentially create turnover so that patrons of those waterfront businesses can find a space and more easily reach their destination.
Okay, so I kind of, but let me give you a scenario. You have, you know, the family drives down from Cedro Woolley. They're going to take in the aquarium, and, you know, they want to have lunch at Ivor's, and they want to go to the old curiosity shop, and they just want to, they want to ride the new Ferris wheel. They want to take in the ambiance, the flavor, the excitement, the fun of the Seattle waterfront. So here these people come, and they're going to probably wind up going home with a $44 ticket because they're not going to be able to find a place to park long enough where they can stay and do everything that they want to do.
So, Ken, when we look at our business districts, we like to have turnover for those on-street parking spaces. That ensures that the most possible drivers can take advantage of on-street spaces. And so what we've done with this area, based on a specific request from the Central Waterfront businesses, is to propose to put time restrictions in a 22-block area. So if someone needs to stay longer than the posted 2 to 4 hours, they can take advantage of off-street lots, private off-street lots, or any number of parking areas around the Central Waterfront, Belltown, Pioneer Square, the International District. So there are still options available for drivers who need to stay longer, but for that core 22-block area around the Central Waterfront, we really need to address the loss of parking that's occurred and make sure that there's turnover so drivers can find spaces.
See, and I understand the philosophy of that, but I'm looking at the practicality of it because, again, I think you're going to find a lot of people who go down to the waterfront on Sundays are not necessarily, although this is disputed because my understanding is that there is what they call parking hogs downtown, right?
I'm sure there are people that take advantage of spaces and stay longer than they probably should, yes.
But we're talking about, like, residents and people who work in the area, stuff like that.
That's right.
Okay. So what – but I'm asking, you're just adding to the expense of this Cedro Woolley family who's coming to Seattle. You know, they don't get in here all that often, I'm assuming. And I, as long as I'm making this up, I can make up whatever I want. So they only come into Seattle two or three times a year. And they've got the three kids with them, with the stroller and everything else. And parking in the International District or in Belltown and then having to hike up and down those hills with the kids and everything to get down to the waterfront is it just feels like we're chasing these people away.
Well, I would argue just the opposite, Ken. I think by virtue of having time restrictions with parking still free, you can still park in those spaces for free, so there isn't any additional cost. What you're doing is allowing that family that comes down for a short duration visit, 2 to 4 hours, to Ivar's or the aquarium or the new Ferris wheel, they can actually find a space. And so you're actually making it more inviting. You're making it easier for them to actually find a free on-street parking space. And so if someone really needs to park for a long period of time because that's how they're taking advantage of their time in Seattle, they're going to have to look at other options. But for that family that needs to come down, make that visit for a couple hours to one of the restaurants, spend a short time at the market or the aquarium, these spaces will be available because there will be more turnover.
I don't know. The guy from Cedro Willie just told me he feels he's getting screwed.
Well, Ken, I think what we want to do is we want to put these in place, and we were going to go study the outcomes, study the impact to make sure they're working as intended. And at the same time, we're going to spend some effort to educate the public, put up signs, not do aggressive enforcement, rather spend more time educating the public with our parking enforcement officers. So we want to make sure people are aware of the changes that are upcoming in mid to late August before we actually start ticketing anyone.
You do realize how much it costs to pay in some of those private lots down by the waterfront.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you're talking a chunk of change.
That's true, and we are aware of that. And, in fact, one of the parking mitigation strategies for replacing the Alaskan Way Viaduct is to partner with those off-street lots to actually have them bring their rates down. And so,
oh, good luck on that.
Well, actually, we have three garages already part of our system where they're going to charge $3 an hour for short-term stays. And so we're really looking at the situation and trying to balance the needs of all the different users of on-street parking because we want to make sure our central waterfront remains vibrant. We want to make sure people can find parking. And so we're trying to walk a fine line and balance all of those needs.
So is there a study that indicates how many people stay longer than 4 hours?
Actually, when we received this request from the central waterfront businesses, we did a two-day study. And we looked at multiple Sundays to determine how long people were staying, given that there were no restrictions. 40% of drivers stay more than 4 hours in these on-street parking spaces. And so we're seeing a significant number of drivers spend a long time in those spaces. And we think a lot of those drivers are local residents or employees of the businesses. And so, again, we want to balance the needs of all the different users, but we think turnover is really the best use of those critical parking spaces.
Couldn't the business owners kind of appeal to their employees to not take advantage of the free parking? Couldn't they put together a little shuttle service or something to accommodate the employees while at the same time freeing up the parking spaces that are rapidly shrinking on the waterfront?
Well, Ken, I think that's an excellent idea, and I'm sure some of those businesses do have programs to help their drivers find parking that's low cost, that's off-street, and take advantage of transit. But I think the one thing the city can control is the right-of-way, the on-street parking spaces. And we think this is a judicious use of that space by not charging an extra fee, but rather just limiting how long one can stay.
I think the extra fee, Rick, is going to come in the way of how many tickets are issued. And, I mean, I know you're looking at bringing extra parking enforcement on.
That's right, because you obviously, if you have restrictions in place, you certainly need to have enforcement officers to make sure people follow those restrictions. But at the same time, our goal ultimately is to make sure that there's turnover. And if people understand the restrictions and stay 2 to 4 hours and then move to another destination, we think that will help bring more people down to the waterfront and make it easier for that family to come into Seattle and enjoy all the amenities that the waterfront offers.
I don't know, Rick. I think if I agreed with you, we'd both be wrong. All right, Rick Sheridan with the Seattle Department of Transportation. Thank you for updating us on this. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, take care. I got to ask, and I the fictitious guy from Cedro Willie, I don't know if you're listening, but I really do think that this is going to impact the decision made by people, to come into downtown Seattle, to go down and enjoy the new Ferris wheel, to just enjoy everything that is the Seattle waterfront. Is this going to influence whether you come into the city or not? I think it is. 206-421-1000 is the local line. 877-397-COMO is the toll-free. What say you? We'll find out in a moment.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So parking in Seattle on Sundays and holidays is free, okay? And that includes down along the Seattle waterfront. Now, the decision has been made, apparently at the urging of businesses along the waterfront who want to see more of a turnover in the parking there, that people are now only going to be allowed to park for 2 to 4 hours, depending on, you know, what the parking restrictions are. So if you were to pull up, if you were to have paid for parking, and it said maximum of 2 hours, that's the limit that you'll be able to stay. And there will be extra parking enforcement on Sundays and holidays. And if you park more than 2 to 4 hours in these designated areas that are free, you're going to get hit with a $44 ticket. Now, I understand the philosophy of what the business owners are saying. Look, we want to give more people the opportunity to come down and appreciate the waterfront. But I don't think you do that at the expense of those who come down to do that. You know, I brought up the fictitious family from Cedro Woolley. The guy from Cedro Woolley's not going to bring his wife and three kids to the Ferris wheel downtown to have lunch at Ivor's and then maybe go to the aquarium if he's going to have to pay $25 or $35 to park. It's not going to happen. It is, I think, going to discourage people from going down to the waterfront. The tourists will just take cabs. But the people who live in the region here, the folks who live in Tacoma, the folks who live down in Olympia or up in Cedro Woolley or Mount Vernon, or Issaquah, they're not going to come down to Seattle in droves, you know, when they realize that it's nothing but an encumbrance. They've already lost a couple of hundred parking places down there because of the viaduct and the construction tunnel. So that's what I'm asking. Is this going to discourage you from coming to Seattle? 206-421-1000-877-397-COMO. We'll start off with Jeff in Tacoma. You're up on Newsline PM. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you?
All right.
You know, I'm going to have to agree with the guy from the state DOT or from the Seattle DOT. I am that fictitious guy from Tacoma, not from Cedro Woolley, but I've got three kids in the stroller and everything like that, and we don't make it to Seattle very often. But I would submit that when we do, we expect that, you know, paying for parking is part of the deal when you get there. And so to find a spot that was open right in front of, you know, say, Ye Old Curiosity Shop or whatever, which is one of the spots that we like to go, that would just be gravy.
Well, but these are days that are already free, Jeff. I mean,
right. Well, but maybe the city of Seattle needs to make more of a point to, because I did not know that you could get free parking on the weekends.
Well, you can park free on Sunday and holidays anywhere in Seattle. And you'll still be able to park free along the waterfront, but you're only going to be able... So you're going to bring your wife and your kids down here. You're not going to be able to go to the aquarium in 2 hours. There's no way on God's great, green, wonderful earth that you're going to make it to the aquarium and get out of there in 2 hours. You're going to wind up with a $44 ticket on your car, pal.
Oh, no, Ken, I agree, but in the budget of going to Seattle and paying for the admission to the aquarium, I've already set aside money to pay for parking because that's what I had assumed was already going on.
I think you're related to Rick Sheridan. I think you're his brother-in-law and he told you to call and dispute this with me. All right, I appreciate the call, Jeff. Thank you.
Take care.
All right, you too. Ted in Linwood, you're up on Newsline PM there, buddy.
Thanks, Ken. I am an actual person from Linwood who actually used to work downtown, and I'm down to the point where I only hassle with going downtown a couple of times a year. Between the hassle and the expense, it's just easier to go somewhere else to spend my money. I can go enjoy a day, walking around, seeing the sights, and staying to have a meal and buying something from the shops. Edmonds, Kirkland, go to Bellevue Square or Alderwood if I want to go shopping. I just can't do it downtown. I can tell you the last two things I bought downtown were a pair of boots at Warshall's and a book at Elliott Bay Books. Both of those stores are gone, and the place where I parked to go to the bookstore is gone because it was under the viaduct.
See, I just think that this is, on top of everything else, I think it's incredibly bad timing. Because because we're watching parking spaces disappear because of the viaduct tunnel project.
Absolutely. It's horrible timing, and it's going to get worse. You walk around Pioneer Square, and there are so many businesses that used to be vibrant, and they are gone. And the kind of people you would want to attract who would come and go shopping and stay and have dinner or come early and have lunch, they're not around that much anymore, and the people you're left with are downright dangerous.
All right.
I used to work with somebody who was stabbed to death in Belltown. The girl was shot on the street in Pioneer Square earlier this year. Why do I want to go for that kind of environment?
All right, Ted, I appreciate the call, because there used to be free parking, and now there's not going to be. Chris in Bellevue, you're up, Newsline PM.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, so I wanted to put a different take on this, which is I want to focus on Mr. Strickland's comment. Where he said to, quote, address the loss of parking spaces. That's passive voice. That makes it sound like Martians came and took the parking spaces away. And I would argue that's indicative of a lack of ownership and leadership, which underpins the traffic problems in this.
Now, I think for Martians, Chris, we'd probably only let them stay here for 2 hours, and then we'd put an $88 ticket on their car. Yeah, I mean, what the hell? We're probably never going to see him again anyway.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So the head of Seattle Parking Department calls and says, hey, you know, I want to make sure that Schramm is aware of the fact that initially we're just going to be putting warning notes under people's windshield wipers. Then, after a period of time, we're going to be sticking those $44 tickets. Yeah, so here's a warning, and here's the ticket. $44, pal. You were warned. We told you. You didn't listen. Tom in Tacoma, you're up on Newsline PM.
Hey, Ken, how you doing?
All right, bud.
Good. Hey, send that family from Cedar Woolley. Send them on down here to Tacoma.
Oh, hell, they don't want to drive that far. What are you kidding me?
Our parking is free, and you can fish from the waterfront without getting attacked by a bunch of PETA people.
Yeah, you can fish from there, but can you eat the fish you catch?
Oh, sure you can.
I don't know. Some of that waterway stuff, I'd be leery about eating Tacoma fish.
And if they actually do have to pay to park it, it is only 50 cents an hour.
All right. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye, Ken.
Yeah, he's putting a plug in for Tacoma. We don't have anybody like that here in Seattle.